This is the Manny Carter Show, a psychic and relationship expert.
Did your man leave you suddenly? Did your girl tell you she never wanted to hear from you again? Find out what drove your significant other insane.
You're wrong to think if it was always just about sex. Schedule a reading with him now at MannyCarter.com.
Another podcast at MannyCarter.com. Everybody, welcome. Linda, you can jump right in there. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier about love. And that's my subject. Again, I am a romantic and intuitive, and I'm trying to bring my psychic really in with that. And I'm trying to help a lot of people who are literally lost and don't understand the concept of love. And, I mean, you can ask them for a definition of love, and they don't really have one. I've been doing that with my clients. I said, can you give me a definition for love? And, I mean, nobody's poetic. They just said, someone who has your back, someone who buys you flowers. That kind of thing. And I said, well, okay, so I'm going to ask you, what's your definition of love?
Okay, well, I would say it's strong affinity for someone that you want to be in their space as much as possible. And that's one of the key definitions of love that I found. And it has to do with, obviously, the emotion, but also intuitive and spiritual aspects too, of feeling that you're right with this person. There's something that really combines or connects with this person. And that's what I think is a very strong definition of love for me. What do you think?
I have my own definition of love, which is I mean, everyone's seeking they're seeking their soulmate. And I say, okay, and I'm finding out that a lot of people, and that's what I'm doing my research on now, because my definition of love, since I've been divorced for 23 years, is someone who's going to be there for you when you need them, essentially. Someone's going to, that you enjoy spending time with. And, you know, I've actually dated some people that, you know, they know me so well that they say what I'm going to say before I say it, and they're thinking on the same, they're essentially on the same page. Since you've traveled so much, I don't know, I saw you saying that you got an art scholarship to London. I was thinking of Paris, and I was thinking of American in Paris with Gene Kelly, and I was thinking, that's beautiful, that is just wonderful, going to London to on an art scholarship. Tell us about more about your adventures, just in general.
Sure. You know, I always seem to be searching for something. I was always very curious, and I'm tended towards more spiritual art because I was an artist, so more of the aesthetics. So when I went there on a scholarship, my first year of art college from the States, I ended up in London, and that gave me access to all the rest of Europe. Because you can just, at that time, they had the hovercraft. You can go over to France and Paris. And in each country, I really was not that experienced, but I learned that each culture and the men from each culture had their own way of looking at things just because of their upbringing. So London, I met professor, assistant professor. He was at Oxford, and he was a brilliant guy. A young guy too, and he taught me a lot, but very prim and proper. He had to have his tea a certain way, and very interesting English. And then I went to France, and here was Joachim, and we went to the underground clubs and saw the Africans play drums and dancing and the outdoor ballets on stages. And, you know, it was just you get swept up in Paris. It's very, in fact, I fell in love with Paris itself, even more so than any man. And then I went
to... How could you not? I mean, interrupt, but how could you not? I've been to Paris, and you know, I kind of tried to walk in the immortal footsteps of Gene Kelly trying to be an American in Paris, because I was in the service, but I wasn't there long enough to experience it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I agree with you 100%.
Sure, absolutely. And then I traveled through France to Italy. And some friends there, Mario and his friends would take me up the top. They had a flat that was, and we went to the roof, and we set up our meal on the rooftop overlooking all of these incredible tops of sculptures and buildings in Florence, Italy. and we had sunset meals up there, and it was just so romantic. And then in the countryside too, we found some little waterfalls, and everybody jumped in, and oh my, it was very, very magical time. And after that, I went to Greece. And my friends, a couple that I knew that were in Athens, took me to the Parthenon at night, and all the lights, really, really gorgeous. And then to a restaurant where we actually did dance, the Greek dancing, and exactly how you would see in a movie. It was so fun. And I was into dancing. I was doing that as one of the classes of all my life. I was into dancing. So I would be joining in anything that happened, and every culture had their own dance. And then I went, and then I decided to join Simon, said, come on over to Nepal. I'm in the hills of Nepal with my friends that are doctor and nurse interning up in the hills for a nonprofit. And they said, okay, I'll just, you know, at those times, you're like, I was so young, right out of high school practically, and I just said, okay, why not? Mm-hmm. And I had no... Yeah, you're indestructible. But, of course, I had some hard, scary times. I almost got attacked a couple times at night when I was hitchhiking through France, and I had my trusty backpack that had a metal tube around it, very, very, very strong, and I used that to fend them off. And that's in the book, too, in a very interesting little vignettes. But basically, when I finally got to Nepal, I went through India first, and met some students over there, and happened to get introduced to the patron arts of the arts in Kathmandu, Hans Georg Behr, who was European. He was Austrian, and his whole house was European. So he had he had records from everywhere, and he had hired artists to help him illustrate his book on Nepal. So I was painting and drawing for him while I was there. I actually was hired to do that. And room and board, and I had I'd go out on the veranda, and I'd see all of the terraced rice paddies going up into the Himalaya Mountains. It was absolutely stunning. I've never seen any mountains more stunning than the Himalayas as I'm coming into Kathmandu. And you look up, and you just see these white-capped, almost tsunami of rocks, all the way around in a circle around Kathmandu, and then to go up into the foothills and trek with just my long skirt and my sandals and with the Sherpa, trying to, really wanting to join Simon. He was way up there. So basically, I met so many interesting people, and the Sherpa people, and also the Nepalese. Very, very kind people, and they believe in past lives and that you go on and you are a spiritual person, not just a hunk of meat. Very interesting. And so I got that viewpoint, and when I went and then I came down from the hills after spending a couple months up there, going from one place to another for 8 hours, we'd trek and to make it to the next village before nightfall. And when I came down, Hans Georg had a... worked out an audience with the Lama. The head Lama of Nepal is one of the two teachers of the Dalai Lama. He was very, very revered, so I got an audience with him because he found out I was an artist and he wanted me to paint his picture. So I did. Excellent. I went there. Excellent. He would be sitting there, more cross-legged, and I went to headquarters, I called it. It was a beautiful temple, and they'd have, as I was painting and drawing, because it took a while to finish the painting, I was sitting across from him, a ways away, and he had people come in very quietly and kneel down and whisper to him some things and then leave. And so there was a young Lama, and he translated for me, and he said, what these people are asking is for help in making a decision, and they have certain problems, and there are people from all of Nepal that come to have an audience with the Lama. And what he does is usually tell them a story that gives them an example and then sends them back to handle their own problems. So he gives them something that's a solution that has occurred that they can use or not use and but he doesn't solve their problems for him. He was making them think of their own solutions and be independent. I thought, wow, that's a great way to be. You know, don't solve everybody's problems. Yeah, why not? And so I stayed in his spare room overnight, and he chanted for me the whole night through. I could hear this really tinkling bells, and oh my God! And so in the middle of the night, I wake up suddenly. I had this incredible series of dreams, and I'll tell you about that. But it was like dreams of the present, dreams of some past, way past, way, way past things, and then dreams of the future. And I saw myself in the future. And so I wake up out of this, and I go outside, and the stars are like blinking like crazy over in the west. And I thought, what the heck? And, you know, you go outside and you have a long skirt, and that's where you have in the garden is where you do your toiletry. Nepal is the, I tried to be as neat as possible. So here's these stars shining bright, and I'm like, oh. And I go back, and I said, I'm on overload, right? And I go back to sleep, and the next morning, the young Lama that translates, because he's been to the West, he knows some English, he said, the Lama said that you will find your answer in the West. When you go back to the West, you will find your answer. And I went, whoa.
Whoa. Right, I don't mean to interrupt you. I want to do something here right now. I'm quite intrigued with Linda Jane Hubbard, who wrote Loving Dangerously, A Journey to Nepal. And I'm going to give a plug for your book. All my listeners, let's go ahead and get together and grab that book, because I find it highly intriguing myself. And I think it would be definitely for young women who had 6 setbacks to have someone that's so positive and so confident like Linda to go ahead and read that book, please. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I had lessons learned. Believe me, I made mistakes too along the way. So it's at www.lovingdangerouslythebook or lovingdangerouslynepal.com. And it's website that has free, it has a free gift on it too, more data and pictures. And you just, if someone goes to buy the book, they get the free email. So there you go. And it's also at Barnes & Noble's and also Amazon. Obviously, Amazon has almost all the books.
Amazon has everything. Yep.
So anyhow, thank you for that. And I just appreciate being on the show because I wanted to share this. I actually wrote the book dedicated to my granddaughter. And even grandparents out there could really relate to this lady, older ladies, because they may have gone through something in their life and they want to share it with the next generation. And I think that's really a key thing that all, when you get older, that's what you want to do. You want to share it with your grandkids. And so I'm writing to Layla during the book. Every now and then you can see little quotes to her. And at some point, she's going to read it, when she gets old enough to be able to understand it. And this is for her, so she doesn't make the same mistakes. But also, if she does make a mistake, she understands that you can learn from it and then come out ahead even better. And that loving people, and the whole thing with love. And I always thought that a man, you had to have a man to feel complete yourself, but that's not the case. You can feel complete as yourself, at being yourself. And then when you find the right mate that complements you and it just clicks, and that's what most people are actually looking for.
And you know what's really funny? You just said something that used to happen. Stories like my grandfather has passed stories down to me. He would pull me up and he would sit me down in the living room and he'd say, I'm going to tell you a story and you can pass it down to your grandchildren. And that's how it was done back in primitive times. They would tell stories and then, there was no recorders or anything like that. And it would be passed down from generation to generation. I'm quite intrigued with you and I like your concept. My question to you though is, even though, because when I was in the Air Force, I was able to travel overseas. I was in the Philippines. I was in London, I was in Germany, and I noticed that the way people court each other is entirely different. And to find out that, like I said, when I read your book, that you were in Nepal, what are the customs for dating in Nepal, just out of curiosity?
Well, they have, that usually is arranged with the parents and have a lot to do with it, just like in India. And then also they may grow up with that guy, that man or woman when they're going to school. They have different kinds of schools. It's mostly, they meet whenever they can, but they also have festivals, lots of festivals where they honor Krishna, or they have the Buddhist festivals. And basically, that's another way, and everybody's up dancing and having fun. It's just like anywhere. I mean, I actually, it's just that it's outdoors. I mean, I went to an outdoor festival where they had masks and they were whirling dervishes, and Krishna is all dressed up and he got a sword and he's killing the lackeys, which are the dervishes, so that they have good fortune one more year. And it was just fabulous, and everybody was in the circles holding hands and then dancing around, and it was beautiful and very lively. Yeah, very lively. Cool. So I think that happens in any culture. There's something like that, and then, like I said, in Greece and in Italy, all of the cultures have their own more like a gathering of people, because obviously you need a little. It's better to be among a lot of people so you can make a selection. You have a lot of men to choose from, right?
And well, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, and basically that's what happened with me, and I fell in love with the countries more than the men, but although I did have a romantic time. In Greece it was very different because Nikos, the young man that wanted to court me, did it very formally because his father was a general of Greece.
And
I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if I... And then he wanted to come with me back to America. I said, oh, I can see it now, you know, Helen of Troy or whatever. Oh, my God. I did not want to get messed with this guy because his general father is probably going to come after me. And all of these...
Oh, wow, you know, Helen of Troy. That's interesting. You're right. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely, I can see that. My mother is part Tahitian, so she always has believed in the arranged marriage thing. So when I turned 19, she already had a girl lined up for me. I had never met her. She was from Florida, and she said you should just marry her. Don't ask any questions. Parents should be allowed to choose your husband or wife. So how's your love life? Out of curiosity now, how is your love life with such a diversity?
I have a wonderful man. Yeah, I'm with a wonderful man, and we're engaged, and I'm really happy. My husband passed away about 8 years ago, but Simon was the man in the book, throughout the book to some degree, and he's doing well and now in Canada, and he's married. So a lot of the guys that I did meet along the way, I kind of followed what was happening now. Either they're no longer here or they're married and happy, and which is fine. You kind of wish the best for anyone that you've loved before. You don't stop really caring about them.
No, not definitely not. Do you feel that due to your experience in life and travel, you were able to be a little bit more better at choosing a selective mate?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for some reason, because I was an artist or free thinker or whatever it was, I attracted a lot of guys. But it was at first it was very confusing when you're like, my daughters were really beautiful girls, and it was confusing to them because they get all of these guys wanting to their attention. And I think that's what happens with girls. They get confused, like, who should I go with, or who should I start dating, or and all of those kinds of things. But they really need to probably meet a lot of guys first and then see how they act with others and in interaction with themselves, and how they communicate well that's really key. I mean, if they don't communicate well and they're kind of sullen, that's, and then you're really lively, that's not going to work too well. So you want to find someone that's on the same level or the same emotional level as spiritual.
Right.
Yeah, and spiritual level too. You know, do they believe that there are? Yeah.
And,
do they believe
and men are very
that
visual,
spirituality?
Right. And men are very visual. And they see something beautiful, they want to own it.
Exactly. And yeah, they're very possessive. That's what Simon, he was at Oxford. He was like, you know what he was doing? It was so funny.
What?
It was like the perfect example in England. He would say, okay, Linda, I'm going to put on these classical, and I want you to tell me, is it Sibelius? Is it Mozart? Is it Vivaldi? Okay, here we go. And he tests me on classical music.
I have dated him on the art theory
or something.
Right. I dated a lady that was exactly like that. And it was, I found out I was listening to Verdi, Beethoven, Bach. Who are the three Bs? Berlioz, Beethoven, and Brahms. It goes, no, that's wrong. I go, well, that's just a matter of opinion. You know, and I got the same thing. So I can relate to that. I can definitely relate to that. Very intriguing
and
man.
I mean, in his own right, he was a great guy. And he taught me how to play chess. And how to make English tea, but then I have to say that he saved me from a really bad thing with when I was in came back to America briefly to help someone that I thought he was going to commit suicide or something. I came right back, and he got me to try a drug, and he shot me up with this stuff, and I didn't really know what it was, and it was too much. It was like heroin, and I OD'd. And I wake up, and everybody's face is white as a ghost, and they say, oh, my God, we lost you, you know. And so Simon heard about it because I'd been in touch with him and sent him letters and tapes and stuff like that. And he said, I'm sending you a ticket. I want you to come now. I'm fearing for your life, basically. And so I did. And that started me on a whole other pathway. I saw a lot of Canada that way because he was in Canada teaching. And it was just, he was a very good guy to help me, so I felt obligated to stay with him. Do you see what I mean?
Sure.
So that lasted for about 6 months, though. What?
Oh, yeah. Obligation.
So, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, obligation, you know, because he saved my life in the
Right.
sense.
Right.
And then, So it depends on what I would say to other women, just look inside yourself and see what you really, really want and need from a guy and how you feel and find out if you can find someone that clicks with that rather than, and not try to change them. See, a lot of people think they could change them. Yeah.
Right. You're right on point.
Don't you?
Because that seems to be the number one problem. They want to get involved with a guy, and, you know, they're happy with his qualities at first, but then they feel that they need to change. I spoke with a lady, I spoke with one of my clients, and she said, well, it is our job as a woman to change a man into what we need. And how would that make a man feel?
She's been taught wrong,
she has been taught wrong. But there's a lot of men that feel the same way.
Oh, yeah, they do, absolutely. And men feel that they have to change a woman. But you just find someone that is being naturally themselves. And if you can see that in a social environment when you go out to a restaurant or a party or whatever, you observe it and don't, you know, take your time and observe a lot of different guys, I would say, because there's so much difference. I mean, I went through seeing someone from all the countries in Europe and then Nepal and India, very much different on how men react and how they are, and some people may love a guy from India, and other people may want someone from Italy, you know? So right now I'm with an American.
Well, I try to tell my female
clients,
you don't have to sleep with a guy, you don't have, and they said, well they always want sex. I said, just because they want sex doesn't necessarily mean you have to give it to them. And I said, you don't have to sleep with the guy to determine, because, you know, you can't spend 24 hours in bed. You can't. It would be nice if you could, but you can't. So you have to see if you can interact with the guy, you know, outside the bedroom. And they said, well, they always want sex. And I said, well, that's just a typical male ploy. I mean, that's just us from a genetic viewpoint. We're strongly driven to reproduce. Right. And so I tell all my female clients that. And they don't understand
I totally understand what you're saying, because it reminds me of a funny story. It's called Fire in the Bedroom in my book, and it's about the only time that I was considering a threesome. And I really liked this one guy I visited in London, Jade, his name was, and he was at they were in a house together. And when I came back to London on my way back from Nepal, then I met a guitar player, David. And Jade was kind of alpha male of the house. And David was just like this artist, musician. I love that. So Jade wanted me to come up and see something in his room, and David trailed along behind. And they said, well, why not? Let's, you know, and they were in, you know, this was the 70s, mid-70s, so they were into the marijuana. So,
yeah.
We smoked some, but you know what happened? This is such a hysterical thing. So here's all these bodies entangled, and we don't know what the hell we're doing. And all of a sudden, someone kicks over a candle, because it was tapestries and candles in those days with music on. And we didn't notice it, and it caught on a tapestry, and the whole, all the tapestry in the bedroom lit on fire. And we had to jump up naked and run around the house, and everybody else in the house at the time, there were several couples in different rooms, they came in to put the fire out. And it was, luckily, it was just smoldering tapestries. And like,
that's sensational.
Yeah, but it was just like fire in the bedroom. After that, I was feeling so sheepish. I was like, oh, I'll never do that again. Wow, what a mistake. One guy maybe was a little bit more aggressive, or more, another guy got jealous or whatever. If you have two guys, it's never going to, I learned to my detriment that it's not going to work. So we were just doing it for fun.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
we're running out of time. We're going to have Linda. I really appreciate you coming on. I'd like to have you on again, but we will talk to Matt about that. And there's plenty of stuff that I think that my clients would like to hear from you, from a woman's viewpoint or a lady's viewpoint. It's been a pleasure, definitely.
Right.
And we're going to get your book. We're going to go out and a lot of people are going to be buying your book by the time I'm done. I really appreciate talking to you. Matt, you want to jump in there?
Hey, Linda, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your story. And your last one actually was very entertaining with fire and smoke and everything. Hey, just real quick,
the book is at www.lovingdangerously, the book.
Yes. That's what I wanted to hear. I was going to plug your book, but you do it so well, so I'm glad that you've done that. I'm going to plug your book, and I hope everybody gets it, because I certainly am. I'm going to read it, and I would like to definitely invite you back on.
Thank you so much. You were just such fun to talk with, and very much we're in sync. Thank you.
Yes, we are. God bless you. And I think next time you come on, I'd like to talk about reincarnation thing. I'd like to talk about that, because I have a theory on that too.
Okay. Yeah, so very good.
Okay.
That's a deal. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Manny Carter Show. Visit him online at MannyCarter.com.